Hi, welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, brought to you this Labor Day weekend, September 2nd, 2006. Tonight's guest will be Dr. Peg Abernathy, who has had a very interesting experience, which she'll be sharing with you. And do you have a book out, too?
I sure do. It's called The Self-Full Life.
The what now?
The Self-Full Life. Like
Self-Full Life. That's a pretty good one.
The Self-Full Life, a true story that will help your soul remember.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
So anyhow, tell the audience out there first of all, let's have a little background about what do you do in life and what are you a doctor of and those kind of things.
Okay. Well, I am the author of The Self-Full Life, and I also do radio spots for Sirius Satellite Radio on the Lime Network. I do one-minute inspirational spots. I call them something to ponder, just a way of looking at life a little bit differently and taking your life and updating your perspectives. And so it's kind of a fun, fun spot that I do for them as well. I have a doctorate of theology, of ancient thought, new wisdom. And I'm not a minister of anything, any doctrine, religion or anything, but I did get my doctorate in theology. And I'm also a spiritual vocalist. I perform at different centers around Los Angeles and up and down the coast. With my music, and also I do guided imagery and hypnotherapy as well, and I enjoy that. I always tell people my music, my guided imagery, my writing, it all comes from the same portal, so it's all a manifestation of the same gift. So that's basically what I'm doing right now.
Great, and what did you do before you did this?
Oh, that's a good question. I always say I had like 1.0, like 2.0, like 3.0, because I really had a different, I had a varied lifestyle. I actually was an entertainer for many years and went into about 15 years ago, decided to get out of that business. I did a lot of session work.
You were a singer, right?
Yes, a studio session singer. I would do films and television themes and music and commercials and that sort of thing. I did well with it, but it got to be a grind and I needed a change. So I actually really took a turn and went into the medical field, and I worked in sales and marketing for different DME companies, which is durable medical equipment, equipments that help people with varying difficulties or problems to have a better life. And I really enjoyed that because I really learned about the business aspect of life. I didn't have that when I was an entertainer. I just stepped out on stage and did my thing and didn't really understand about how business worked, so it was school for me, and I loved it. And then about 4 years ago, I decided that I had been in that business for about 10 years, and I decided to leave the company and write my book and go back to school, and that's what I've been doing. And it's been amazing, and I love it.
So when you were singing, what kinds of music did you do?
Well, the studio work was, I did everything. I did a lot of Disney and, you know, that sort of thing, the character music. But then I also did a lot of really heavy rock and roll. I sang and wrote the Jordache commercials, that sort of thing. So some group of producers would know me as a rock and roll singer, and others would know me as, like, this Disney Snow White voice. So I was a technician when it came to singing. I could pretty much crank out what they wanted. So I sang everything. But my heart is in light pop and spiritual music and music that has a message. That's what I love to sing now, and that's what I do sing now.
And it was right at when you were like 19 years old or something when you had your first major experience?
Singing experience?
Well, no, a spiritual experience.
I grew up very, very religious. I was a very staunch Catholic. Okay. And I actually had, as a child, I knew something was different about me. I had a very strong Catholic belief, but I had this wild imagination, and I would tell people these stories. And the nuns would take me out at recess, and they'd take me out to the front of the school and sit me on the steps and say, okay, Peggy, tell us the stories. And I would proceed to tell them these stories about the saints and the angels and Jesus and all the people that I knew in that religion about our adventures. And so I really feel that was the first foray into, you know, different things that happened to me as a child. I knew I was different. But I kept on that path for very staunchly until I had the traumatic event that caused me to leave my body and go to the other side.
Yeah, so when did you have, tell everybody what happened to you that sort of really got your life on your new track?
You bet. I was performing, as usual, And I remember, the last thing I remember was trying to introduce people, the guys in the band, and I felt like an explosion in my midsection. And I knew something was, I describe it as an explosion, but it was just the most intense pain I've ever had. Now, digressing, I do say that I had monthly problems, female trouble, off and on through most of my life. And so I thought that this was just going to be another really bad month. Well, it was more than that, and ended up in the emergency room. And they were very nonchalant and asking me if I thought, you know, I knew what it was. And I'm saying, no, I was bleeding. And they were just like, well, is this your monthly? And I said, this is not what it is. It's something else. I just know it. And they got angry with me because I was in so much pain and I was yelling and wouldn't let them touch me. So the doctor got frustrated and he jumped up and left the room. He said, well, if you're not going to let me help you, then I can't help you. And so he left. And I remember I was alone. And being very, very young, I remember thinking, kicking into this survival mode. I felt like something was going on. And then the thought of death went through my mind. And I was, again, being very young, I'd never had that before, you know. When you're young, you're invincible, right?
Right.
You don't die when you're young. You never die, right? So, but it was a strange sensation, and the thought kept coming through my mind. Finally, I kicked into survival mode, and I started praying every prayer that I'd ever been taught in my religion. And just kept praying, and then the thought came through my mind again, and something happened, and I say this all the time, that there was a definite line that I crossed from self-survival, and where it kicked into, okay, I'll go, all right, acceptance is what it was. And the moment that my heart and my mind agreed that, okay, I can't fight this, this is really happening, then I began to hear a roaring sound and a buzzing sound, and I heard people coming back or rushing back in the room. And I remember smiling, and the next thing I knew, I found myself at the top of the ceiling of the emergency room. And I remember thinking, the body's back there, it's down there, but I don't want to look at that body, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be a part of it, I'm out of here, kind of, that was my thought. And I remember I wanted to go towards a beautiful light. Now I have to say this other thing, I'd never heard of a near-death experience at the time, this was about 20 years ago, and I had never heard of anything like this. I never, you know, it just wasn't a part of my daily thing. I didn't know what a near-death experience was, or out-of-body experience, whatever you want to call it. So I was expecting something completely different, but I saw this light at the end of a tunnel, and I found myself floating over, like, these trees that were like negative, like when you take a picture and there's a negative, kind of a negative treetops with people waving to me. And I remember there was the most amazing peace and peaceful sensation and yearning for this light at the end of the tunnel. And it was like this intelligence, and I knew that I had to get to the light. So I found myself rushing through the tunnel and then bursting into the light. And where it was sort of like, I say, sort of like being born, where you're just inundated with sound and light. And it was the most amazing, beautiful experience. You cannot describe it in human terms. It was more of a feeling, you know, than words. And then immediately my life started passing before me, different events in my life. Not much had really happened because I was fairly young, so there wasn't anything major at the time. But then I saw myself being married, and I remember stopping and thinking, oh, I forgot about him. and then I remembered my husband, and I realized I'm not done yet. And I heard a voice say, not now, my daughter. And I remember thinking, you know, who was that? Was that God? Was that a saint? Or who said that? Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the voice was familiar, but I couldn't place it. And immediately I knew I had to go back, that I wasn't done. So I felt myself rushing backwards through the light, through the tunnel, over the treetops, and back into the body, where I kind of entered it with a thud, kind of like a thunk kind of a sensation. And I remember feeling very clammy and cold, and then taking a deep gasp of air, and then like that, and my arms went straight up in the air, and I was back in the room, and they put my arms down, and then they were putting instruments on me and checking my heart rate and all this kind of stuff. And that's the near-death experience story, but that's just the beginning.
And then what happened after that?
Oh, my gosh, you have 9 hours here?
Yeah.
But no, actually, first of all, I always forget to tell people what happened to me. They always say, what caused this problem? Well, I had an ovarian cyst that had burst, and it caused internal bleeding and peritonitis.
That's what caused you were bleeding out, in other words.
Yes, and it was massive and awful. And the doctor told me later that kind of pain, it's like pouring salt in an open wound. I mean, when you're bleeding internally, it's so painful. And then to have peritonitis as well. It was a tumor, a large tumor that had burst and bled and put the peritonitis into the cavity. That's why I was just like, you know, freaking out with the pain. But the other thing I noticed when I opened my eyes is that everybody around me was glowing. And I kept saying, everybody's glowing, to the doctors. And they kept checking my eyes, thinking maybe something had happened, and oxygen deprivation or whatever.
You were in the hospital?
Yes, and I would cry and say, everybody's glowing. And they thought I was crazy. They go, what do you mean everybody's glowing? And I said, there are these colors around people's bodies, and they're moving around. And, well, as it turns out, they never found anything, and as the days went by, the colors came into very clear focus and never left, and they would move around and respond to the person's emotion who was speaking to me. You know, if they were angry or if they were happy or excited or whatever, this energy field around the body would move. Again, I had no idea what that was. I do now, of course, but I didn't know anything about the aura, the human body. But this portal was open when I was on the other side, and then I was able to see this. So fast forwarding, and for all the people who are Catholics in your audience, I think you'll understand this. I finally had had enough of the colors. I call them the colors and the tunnel experience. And I went to see a Catholic priest. And I can just hear your Catholic audience members going, uh-oh, because they probably think they know where this is going. But I doubt it, because you're not going to believe what happened. I walked in, and this priest, this messenger angel, whoever he was a priest there, said, I told him, I blurted it all out, and he said, you've been given a gift, and you must learn and grow and seek with this gift. And he reached up, and he took a book off the shelf, Raymond Moody's Life After Life. And he said, this book tells stories of people like you. You should read it. And then he just kept encouraging me, and he said, and the colors you see around the people's bodies were, so that's called the aura. And there are books on that phenomenon as well. And I was just flabbergasted. I mean, there I am going, what? What are you talking about? I was so blown away. But this wonderful priest gave me my spiritual wings that I needed at the time to really begin my journey. And he said, go and seek. And so I did. And that's the first part of the story.
Okay, and then now do you see auras on people now?
I do, absolutely, and I've been documenting it over the years, different things. I can tell usually when somebody's pregnant, I can tell when somebody's lying, or when they're depressed. I do see something in the aura when somebody's either under stress and or has heart trouble. And then about 10 years ago, I started seeing all of these babies coming in with a different kind of color around their bodies, and I called them star babies because their aura was clear. All of ours, anybody over the age of about 25, 30, ours are just like multicolored, multi-hued.
Right. Now, what about a pregnant mother, you know, say 7 or 8 months pregnant? Was she more towards a rose colored, or what color aura would she have?
Well, actually, they're all the same. Everybody's just the same, and the only difference is that with a pregnant, I see like a ball of light energy. I call it like a thumbprint.
Right.
That's embedded on the left side of the aura, just above the head. And that's where it kind of embeds itself. That's when if I see that on somebody, that's when I know they're pregnant. I've told 3 or 4 girlfriends that they were pregnant before they knew it.
Yeah, that's funny. Like they were 2 or 3 weeks along?
Or even one of them was even soon. One was like 10 days.
Wow.
Yeah, and she was like, I'm not pregnant. And sure enough, she went to the doctor the next day, and indeed she was pregnant. And that happened a few times. And I have a lot of funny stories about that. But that's what I see when I see the aura.
Yeah, I always felt that the soul hovered around the parent, especially the mother, just before, pregnancy occurred.
Yeah, I think you have it right in the fact that I think basically we choose our parents. This is my belief.
Right.
That we choose our parents and we choose the portal that we're going to come into for various reasons. Everything from your gene pool and what your physical body needs to do for your karma, all the way up to the guidance you'll receive from those souls. And basically, I think it's like the soul going, okay, this one's mine. said, yeah. This is my mama. Don't anybody take this womb. This one's mine.
Exactly.
And that's what happens. And I see it a lot. And it's really a cool thing. But anyway, these new babies that are coming in, they have a clear spark. They look like sparklers, like 4th of July sparklers. And that their aura is sparkling. That's why I call them star babies.
Right.
And now I'm seeing all these different books coming out about indigo children or crystal children. And people like that these new babies that are coming in that seem to be so smart and so advanced
right.
for their ages. But, so that's something that I deal with on a daily basis. And I don't believe that the aura is a spiritual thing. It's an extension of the body, the electromagnetic field around the body. It's just in response to your physical body. I think it has a lot to do with, you can help heal yourself through your aura. And that sort of thing. But
I usually explain it as electrolytes in the brain acting like a battery, firing off synapses in the nervous and in the head and the brain,
mm-hmm.
and that connects that electrical field to the brain, which then sends it out through 72,000 major nerve centers down through the spinal cord.
Yes.
And depending on the synaptic rate or the modulated rate of that person's consciousness, determines the color frequency, because the human beings typically perceive light between 400 and 700 angstrom, sound below it, and ultraviolet and spirituality beyond that.
Wow, yeah.
And if you can widen the bandwidth of your synapses of your brain by putting clean foods, keeping off of drugs and alcohol, not eating meat, it gives you a wider bandwidth, a higher frequency, and a greater perception, and you can see deeper into other people. That's kind of how I've always explained it.
But see, that's true, though. You're right, because it is a manifestation of your physical body, so it responds to what you're doing. Just like you said, if you're drinking or you're eating improperly, it's going to react in such a way that it's not going to be as open and as healthy and vibrating at the right level it needs to be to have your body, be a receptor of the light and anything else.
Yeah, I agree. That's Ayurvedic medicine to me. It always talks like that about all this stuff. And then the sad part, or the downside of it is that the battery starts getting impurities in it as the liver gets toxified over a lifetime if you don't have some liver cleanses and some cleansing periods. So therefore, then you start to lose your bandwidth if you don't take care of yourself. Whereas I think if you do, the genetic gene pool changes in as you get older, and it actually gives you a chance for better bandwidth than you had as a child, because I think that if you had too much bandwidth as a child, your emotions would be too exposed and you wouldn't be able to handle the stress. When you're older, the maturity of that age gives you a buffer so that you have a buffer up. So when emotional situations come up, you can surmount them without having, delicate nerve damage on the higher chakras and things. That's the other side of the coin.
You've studied it a lot more and differently than I have. I basically go with the feeling of it. And because it wasn't, it's very fascinating because everything you're saying is what I believe as far as that goes. But I just haven't studied it in depth, because what happened is as I moved forward, I ended up going to a shiatsu massage therapist, and she did a guided imagery session on me.
Right.
And I found myself popping to another realm of existence, and this is where the true miracle begins. That night was an amazing adventure. She took me through this thing, or she guided me into this state of being where I completely lost track of where I was, and I didn't hear her anymore, and I found myself at a lakeside and thinking, what the heck is this? where am I?
Right.
And then I thought, this is so real that I thought, uh-oh, a little creeping of mental illness was creeping in there. I thought, am I, losing it here? What is this? And when I came back, she asked me, how long do you think you were gone? And I said, 5 minutes. And she said, no, 2 hours. So, I know that on the other side and during meditation, time's not linear over there like it is here on Earth.
No, not at all.
Well, we count things in days and hours and minutes and seconds. Over there, it's happening all at once. And, of course, there is no time frame. And that's really hard for humans to understand that concept. It's just to wrap themselves around that concept, it's like, I don't get that, right?
Yeah.
But you have to kind of either have a knowing or experience it. But what happened is, if I may move forward. You want to keep going?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay, well, this is what happened. This is where, in my opinion, the true miracle is. I kept going to the lakeside during deep meditation for a couple of years, and would have the same routine. And finally, one day, I saw a light. There's a beautiful forest at this lakeside, and I saw this light beaming through the forest. And I was curious, and I went through the forest following the light. And I went through a clearing on the other side, and I found myself at the base of a beautiful temple, a stone temple. And looking up, halfway up, there was a person standing there, a man, beckoning me to come up. And, you know, at first I wasn't frightened or anything on that side, but I began to worry about, again, mental illness when I came back from this meditation after he pulled me up there and just sat me down in the niche and just turned away and kept guarding this temple and didn't say anything. And when I came back out of that meditation, I began to really worry that I really was becoming mentally ill, because I'm a very intelligent woman. There's no explanation for this. What in the world is this now? Never seen a person before, right? And so, when I was over there on the other side, I had no fear, but in my awakened state, I was worrying that I was going crazy, you know, because here I am seeing a person as real as anybody on the street. He was so real. Anyway, I kept doing this for about 6 months, and eventually he began to communicate to me through telepathy, and he told me my journey and what was going on, and he sent me the rest of the way up the temple stairs, and I stepped into the temple at the top, where I won't go, there's not enough time really on your show to explain exactly what happened, but suffice it to say, it's in my book, but suffice it to say that there was a light that appeared at a low platform at the end of this room, and six guides presented themselves to me as my spirit guides, and as people that, you know, we are a team, a soul team of sorts, and that they were my teachers, and that I would be working with them, and that someday I would turn these teachings outward towards the masses, right? And so, again, this was the most amazing miracle of my life, being introduced to these people, these entities. And the one that I call the wise one, he was the person that said, "Not now, my daughter," in the old near-death experience, you know. I recognized his voice because I had been coming to the temple to study for eons, you know. But so this began my journey of study with the guides. And I studied, I would go over to the other side and we would study. And I'd come back out of this deep, deep meditation. And when I would come back out of it, I would get a little bit worried about the mental illness, because here I was talking to dead people now,
yeah.
Right? Here I'm talking to six dead people. And so what happened is I popped over one night, and the doctor guy said to me, "You need to go to an embodied physician. You have what's in your world called diabetes, and you need to get to the doctor now." And he was talking about my cells and all this different type of stuff. And I'm like looking at him thinking, what are you talking about? Isn't that like an old person's disease? And what are you talking about? And anyway, I didn't listen. And so for a couple of weeks, nothing happened. And I can remember going back and him saying, "You must go. You must go. It's imperative or you will no longer exist.
You'll be over there permanently."
Exactly. So what happened, and I'm almost at the end of the story here, I decided, he said, they sent me to a specific bookstore to read about this. They said it's a book of symptoms. They told me exactly where it was, and I went there and I saw it. It said diabetes, because now I was beginning to be symptomatic. And I was more afraid to go to the doctor of learning that I had diabetes. I was more afraid of the fact that I didn't have it, because then the guy would have to deal with the fact that the guides maybe weren't real and that they were in my imagination. Because here they diagnosed me with something that is verifiable, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking, okay, so I was so frightened, but I went to my gynecologist because I didn't have a diabetes doctor, right?
Right.
And I said, "Will you test me for diabetes?" And he said, "Why?" And I said, I didn't want to tell him I was conversing with dead people. So I said, "I have symptoms and blah, blah, blah." He goes, "Well, if you want me to, I will." And I said, "I do want you to." Well, I went and had the test. Long story short, my blood sugars were 758. If anybody knows anything about diabetes, they probably just fell off their chair, because I have type 1, not type 2, not the quote-unquote older person's type, you know, disease.
Right, you got a radical blood sugar rush.
I have juvenile diabetes. Now, of course, now kids are coming up with this. These overweight children are all showing up with this regular, the old diabetes that only old people used to get. Terrible. They're coming out, you know, with their diets and everything. They're not eating properly. But at the time, type 1 is, you usually would get it when you're a child.
That's the way that one works.
Yeah. And so, well, anyway, my point, and the doctor said to me, "Well, you have diabetes." And I said, "Okay, what do I do?" And he said, "You don't act like somebody who was just diagnosed with diabetes." And I thought to myself, because I've been diagnosed about 4 weeks ago, and I because my guides told me, I'm thinking this to myself, but I was actually excited that they told me something that I verified.
Right.
And had no clue about type 1 diabetes. I didn't know. And so anyway, that was the beginning. And so I've been studying with these major, wonderful, incredible guys. And
so you didn't have to go up on insulin then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I'm insulin dependent. Type 1 is the type you have to have insulin all day, every day. I don't make any insulin.
You don't make any at all?
I don't make any type. You know, I'm not a doctor, and I can't medically say the complete difference because I'm not a doctor. But type 1, I do know that you just don't make any insulin, and you have to supplement. I am dependent on insulin. Some people are treated with insulin. You know, they give extra injections to give them some help. If I were in a forest and I didn't have my insulin with me, I would die probably within 3 to 5 days.
Yeah, do you take a couple shots a day? Are you doing it in a pill form or what?
Oh, there's no pill doesn't do anything for.
Okay, so you have to do the shot.
I take around. You're gonna faint when I tell you, but I take about 10 shots a day.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm on multiple injections. I was on the insulin pump for many years and actually spoke. That's how I got in the field of medical sales, was when I was diagnosed, and I actually speak on insulin. On the insulin pump therapy and the psychosocial aspect of dealing with a chronic disease, and I did really good work for 10 years or so in that field, but it was time for me to move on. But I took lemon and made lemonade and learned about it, and I had the disease now for a long time, and I'm so healthy and I'm so proud of myself that I've done so well.
That hasn't evolved to stage 2 or anything like that?
It doesn't do, type 1 doesn't turn into type 2.
Okay.
Type 1 is just it's an autoimmune disease. It's, you know, your own body attacks itself and kills off the islet cells.
Yeah.
So I'm the one who could benefit. I'm the diabetes that can benefit from the stem cell research. It's my type of diabetes that can do that.
Do you eat a lot of raw foods?
Raw?
Yeah, like vegetables and fruit. And.
I do that. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I do.
Salads are really good for any type of diabetic.
Well, and also, they have the bottom line is that I test my blood sugars, and I know I test a lot. And I poke my finger and put the blood on a test strip, and it gives me a number. And that helps me to determine what I eat and how much insulin I need, if I need to correct a high blood sugar and then eat. You know, it's very difficult. It's not for sissies.
No, I know that.
Type 1 is not for sissies, and you have to really test a lot. I always say, if I didn't have a tester, I don't know how people did it back in the olden days when they didn't have these home meters. Because I can't imagine giving myself a shot of insulin not knowing what my blood sugar is. It would scare me to death. But anyway, they, you know, working with the guides and the deep meditation, I think it's helped me, because having this type 1 for all these years with no complications is just amazing. People can't believe it. And I look so much younger than I am. People can't even believe how old I am. And I say that when I go into this deep meditation and cross to the other side, I have a theory that everything kind of stops. The aging process and everything. And also, I wanted to tell you something that you might find interesting. There's an organization here in Los Angeles who has approached me about testing me in the lab while I'm on the other side and while I'm channeling the messages from the other side, which I do by putting my hands on the keyboard. I place my hands on the keyboard and I talk with the guides and the conversation is typed out. And then when I come back from the other side, there it is, word for word.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, anyway, they're going to videotape and do the brain scan and everything on me. I've decided that I like them and I trust them, and I'm so excited because I want to know what my body does when I'm on the other side. And nobody's ever tested me like this before. I haven't allowed it. But because it's a very vulnerable place to be when you're gone like that, because I go really deep, really deep. And so that's going to be very exciting, and it'll be documented.
Yeah, that's interesting. That sort of puts you, your body sort of made you spiritually behave.
What do you mean?
Well, obviously you have a huge discipline now with the diabetes, and that keeps you very much tuned into the other side, and then it gives you good information, so it's a very high motivating factor.
Uh-huh.
Whether you like it or not, that's kind of what's happened.
And you know what? You're so right, because you know what they said? That I chose this gene pool to get to carry this disease, have it be a part of my life for a reason. One of them, of course, is discipline, and also, but the main reason they said, because you would have a tendency to, you'd want to be on the other side so much more. But with my type of diabetes, I have to attend to it all the time.
Yeah.
I have to monitor it and balance it all the time. So I can't be gone, you know, for hours and hours on end. I have to come back. And so they said that there was a reason, because it's such a beautiful, when I'm on the other side, the last thing you want to think about is the life experience. But see, I chose a life experience. I have to get back in the body and do my job. About 4 years ago, when I quit my job and decided to write my book, the guides came to me and said, it's time to turn the teachings outward. It's time to be the bridge. They say to me, always remember, you are the bridge. And through all my things, all my work, I'm bringing it to the mainstream. And like the spots that I do for Lyme on Sirius Radio, they're not spiritual spots. They're based in spiritual truth, but nobody knows it because I'm mainstreaming it. And I love that, because people are getting a wonderful truth without even knowing it. So they haven't had a chance to judge it or anything. But I talk about career and happiness and that sort of thing in these spots. They're not, you know, connecting with your spirit guide spots. They're not that at all.
Yeah.
And the guides have said to me, it doesn't matter the source. It just, you know, just keep doing the math. Just keep yourself out there for the more a more broad based audience as far as the teachings go, and they will hear it the way they need to hear it. And sometimes it.
So how are you using your communication with the other side in your daily life?
Do you have
lectures and things like that, or?
What I'm doing is I do workshops. Where I do, people will come and I will do, I will speak. Sometimes I'll tell my story, an abbreviated version of my story. And then I do guided imagery live, where I take everybody on a live guided imagery journey within. I'll sing, and people read my book. And I'm just now branching out into all kinds of wonderful things that are coming up. And I'm just, my goal is to not have any main goal, just to allow myself to follow my heart and see what happens and see what manifests itself with this work. The people I've helped through the readings, which I do readings, it's not something I like to do all the time. I don't really feel that's where my work is. But I've helped so many people, and it's been such a blessing in my life to help people, you know, with these readings. I have to be careful with that, though, because, you know, there are certain guidelines and spiritual truths that they follow. But it's a miracle, I mean, truly. And it'll be
documented. You work with children at all, not very often?
I've never done a reading for a child, actually, no.
Yeah.
I haven't. See, one of the things they won't do is you cannot ask them a question about somebody else. Like, I can't go and say, okay, give me the scoop on Fred. Tell me about Fred. Without your permission, they won't do that.
Yeah.
They said that's a spiritual law. You just cannot go and ask about somebody else without their permission.
Right.
And they also say that they're not soothsayers or fortune tellers. They said we can't tell of the future if it involves someone else's free will. If Peggy says, am I going to get that job? Well, in that moment, that person who's thinking about me might think, yeah, I'm going to give Peg the job. But then the next day, that person might go, no, I'm not. I changed my mind. Well,
yeah.
That's free will. So the next day it may not be true. So they said you cannot do that sort of thing. However, you can talk about your own path, your own truth. And usually when people ask the questions, I'm glad that they usually ask about their soul journey, as opposed to, you know, should I go out with so-and-so kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I do those kinds of readings, but mainly they're about the soul journey for people, you know, because that's what it's about. It's about the It's a miracle in my mind. I keep saying that.
So how does it work with what religious denomination do you normally practice in your religious discipline?
I don't.
Okay, so you're free. You're a free flowing soul now.
I follow the teachings of the Christ consciousness, which is, you know, through meditation,
yeah.
Self realization. I believe that I've studied religions. Of course, when I got my doctorate, I had to study all kinds of religions, which was fascinating. Oh, I loved that class. It was wonderful. I had to visit different denominations and watch their services. It was amazing. But for me, you know, I feel that I'm flying on my own right now with a lot of support from a lot of people. And I think to myself, when I die, and God says, Peg, you were wrong. It's the so-and-so religion that had it right. But you know what? Your intention was for the greater good, so come on in. That's the way I believe. I do an analogy where you have a 2-year-old child, and you say, little Johnny, draw mommy a picture of a tree. And you give Johnny this piece of paper and a pen, and he just scribbles up a big mess, right, on the paper. And just gleefully hands you this paper and smiles and says, tree. And you look at that, and of course, it doesn't resemble a tree. It's the furthest thing from a tree. But to you, because the intention was pure and lovely, you put that on your refrigerator, and you show everybody Johnny's little tree. That's Johnny's tree. Isn't it darling? Isn't it wonderful? And that's the way I see my relationship with the spiritual entities that, and the spiritual, you know, force that I believe in. So I figure God knows the intent of my heart, and so I'm flying free right now.
Do you have any kids at all?
You know, I don't. And I, for some reason, I still think there's somebody out there for me. I can't have children because when I had the near-death experience, I lost one ovary and one tube. But then about 2 years later, I lost the other side from another tumor, but not through an emergency like that. They kept, because of what had happened, they kept an eye on it. They saw this cyst beginning to grow, and they kept watching it. And sometimes they shrink and go away, but this one was not going away.
Yeah.
So they had to go in and take everything. I was so young, and it was heartbreaking. And I tried adoption. Nothing ever panned out for us. And but I do believe that your children find you, and if that little soul is meant to be, is meant to be parented by me, then it will find me. Otherwise, then I'll be, you know, my book will be my baby, or my work is my baby. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to be a parent, I suppose. But it is definitely a heartbreaking thing for me. I won't lie about that.
So how do people get a hold of your book? Is it in the stores?
Yes,
they order it from you, or how do they get it?
Well, all of the above. You can go to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. Any of the online retailers have them. You can go into the bookstores, and if it's not on the shelf, they can order it for you. And you can also go through my website. My website is, of course, www.self-full-life.com. So it's selffullife.com. And you can order it on that site as well. Basically, what that'll do is just a link that takes you directly to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, whatever you want, which is your choice.
Yeah, I apologize for not putting your website up. Normally, I would have done that, but I didn't. When Tom hooked me up with you, he didn't give me your website.
Nobody
gave it to me, so I would have put it up there. Go ahead and repeat it again so people can hear
it. www.self-full-life.com.
So that's pretty easy.
Yeah, when at first people always say, huh? And I say, self-full life, and they go, huh? And I'm thinking, is this a good name for a book? People have trouble. But you know what? It really says it all, because the book is my story. It's about my journey. But the thing that's so cool about the book is the last chapter is a question and answer chapter from the guides, where I put my hands on my keyboard and I ask general questions that I think that the general public might be interested in finding out about. And I put my hands there, and those are in the book, and they call it the gift to the reader. And that's a fascinating part of the book. But it goes into great detail about the temple and what I saw, how everything was presented to me. And I have so many books inside just waiting to get out of my heart, too. You know.
How long has this book been out?
Not very long at all. It's been out about a year, but I'm just now really getting it going. Of course, you know, first-time author, it's not easy, right?
Very hard. It's amazing. Yeah. Did you publish it yourself or what?
I published it through iUniverse. It is a self-publisher, but it's not like the old traditional vanity press where you go buy 3,000 books and sell them out of your car.
Yeah.
It's not like that at all. Because of print-on-demand and the publishing industry is changing so dramatically, through them, I was able to get an ISBN number, which puts me in the database for all the wholesalers, and people can order my book from the regular bookstores.
Right.
So that's awesome. The only difference is I don't have a distribution deal, which means that, you know, if they look at my book and they look at, you know, like, I don't know, Bill Clinton's book, well, whose book are they going to get the shelf space to?
Exactly.
Not me. You know, not yet. Now, that will change.
Well, that's what PR is all about.
You
getting
bet.
Out there.
You bet. And
doing
so that's,
and
that's what we're doing. Yeah. And I feel like my little book is flying on the wings of sparrows right now. And I always say that one day a big eagle is going to swoop down and grab it and take it to the new heights and the place it's supposed to be. It's a good little story, and it's an easy read. It's not a real complicated book, and I did that on purpose. That was intentional to keep it simple and to write what I know, and I think it pretty much says it all.
Yeah. Now, these guides that you talk to on the other side, are they always the same ones, or did they alternate, or what?
Great question. I had, for many years, I have 7 guides now.
Yeah.
And in one of the chairs is, I used to call it the revolving chair, because you're right, different ones would come in and out of my life for different reasons.
Right.
But now, that particular chair, about, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago, became permanently filled by a guide by the name of Ia, who presents herself at this point as a young girl. And she and I are writing a series of 7 books. I'm channeling them through, she's coming through me to channel these books. And what they are, it's called The Book of Ia, and there's 7 books, and there's 7 books about the 7 different lifetimes in the soul, incarnations of this soul known as Ia. And it's the last year in that life. So book one, the Book of Ia, book one, is that soul journey, the last year in the life of that soul. And then the next book will be book 2, and it'll be the last year in the life of the same soul reincarnated. Am I making sense?
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so
totally.
That's what I'm doing. And you know what's fascinating about it? I've only read part of it, you know, because, again, I channel it through my hands. And she began one of the books, and I put it aside while I've been promoting the Self for Life. But it seems to be paralleling our world today. And these lifetimes are set in ancient times, back before we annihilated ourselves the first time around, you know.
Right. We've done that a few times.
You bet. And so this was set way back when, you know, eons ago. And it's fascinating to see the parallels. But actually, I started channeling that, but now I had to put that aside, like I said, temporarily.
Right.
While I do this other little, get this other little guy going, and there's this wealth of books and also other things, the guide's teachings and whatnot that are waiting to come out as well.
Yeah, it's good. Everybody brings truth to the table now. You know,
mm-hmm.
I look at it, the successive linearity of the way lifetimes were is kind of coming to the end as we come towards what we call the end of the days, and I feel that we're living all our lives at once at this point.
Yeah.
And that gives us an altered perception of time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can take that alteration, then when you accept it, then you can move around into other side containers, other dimensions, and move into places like where you're going.
Exactly. See, that's a perfect way. I've never heard it put like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what I do, because the guides have even said to me that they said, we are one breath, one heartbeat away from you. We are right here. It's just that the naked eye can't see these other realms because we're in this dense body and we're not open to it. I just happen to get this portal open where I can pop into their realm.
Yeah, it's what we call sidestepping. You know, the other thing that we have to fight here, which is breaking down now, one of the things that's breaking it down, believe it or not, is this massive amount of evil that comes out through terrorism and other forms. It does break down the sanctuary of most all thought forms being interlinked. In other words, if you were to look at time on some linear fashion or a parallel fashion, all our imaginations are synchronized to something that links us all together. So if you were time traveling, for example, you'd have to break out of that.
Right.
And for a long time, that was a pretty strong bond. But now, like what you say, these new babies are coming in with this clear light around them.
Yep.
They're already coming in. They're probably setting a tone or an energy field up in this vibration that we live in now, and it's breaking it down. It's like breaking down bacteria or a virus, you know, with an enzyme.
They're like the little injections people take.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And that's what's necessary, because it gets the actual free will gets going again. I think that the Orthodox religions, the Orthodox, you know, religion to me started 3,000 years ago or more when people had their versions of soul experience. There, I think our time was limited to our expression of the higher nature into our form. I think our DNA limited us somewhat. So all that insecurity, we began to establish religions, and we had wars over those religions, holy wars. So then we created government to regulate and protect our ability to have our individual rights to religions, and then of course started the Crusades and everything.
Right.
So now today I think it's becoming more of a one God, one consciousness within kind of thing, because
mm-hmm.
we realized that from the last 2,000 some odd years it didn't work. You know?
And
wars just got bigger. Yeah.
Well, you know, with this new with the internet and instant news, you know, that we have this instant access to everything that's going on,
yeah.
can be both daunting and also uplifting, like you said. You know, the conscious whole, well, first of all, the conscious whole of anything, the collective whole, I should say, of anything kind of determines the vibration.
Right.
And in my opinion, religion, as good as it can be for some people that need that, remember, you're only if you insert yourself in a group of people, you're going to vibrate whatever the collective whole is.
Exactly.
And if you need to do it on your own or you need to keep going up, it's not going to be, you're not going to be able to do it. You need to break free from that.
Yeah, and what I've typically seen in the past, the David consciousness of the female energies would have a tendency to get lost in the male energies.
Mm-hmm.
And then the male energies, if they didn't agree, they're the ones that started the war.
Wars.
I think
men
started the wars more than women.
Right.
Ego, the men had a stronger ego and a harder head, and the women had greater feelings.
And the reason, and I, my sisters, all my girlfriends, we all say, we should be in charge of everything. There would be no war. There would be.
Yeah, it's probably true.
Who knows
I don't have a problem with that at all. I'm waiting for women to take over.
You know what? A lot of intelligent, forward-thinking men, I've heard them say that.
Yeah.
You know, they're not afraid of that. They're almost like, okay, come on, because we're screwing it up. Somebody help us, please.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a Leo anyway in birth astrology. So Leos like to sit in a cave and let the lioness do the hunting. So I can do that in a minute, you know.
Yeah, you guys have had your share now.
You need the big growl. I can come down and give you a good growl for protection.
That's right. That's right. But you know, it's such a different kind of energy and of take on life, you know. But the thing that I like that what you said is that the fact about time travel too. I think that's the key to time travel. Digressing here a bit, what you were saying before about you know these different dimensions that are just right here and that you know it's happening all at once.
Yeah, they're parallel universes and side continuums. In modern science now, because I'm also a physicist, we're seeing that now. You know, science is starting to see that, and they're actually seeing that the experiment and the experimentor are interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the imagination of both giving us a result. In the old days, some very interesting things were demonstrated, but if they couldn't be duplicated in some other country or some other lab, they were said not to exist. And that was mm-hmm. unfortunate because probably if you go back 3,000 years when we didn't have electricity and all these mechanical things and pollution in the world,
right.
we had a much higher spiritual presence. We could probably see fairies and gnomes and
That's
all kinds
right.
of things.
That's right. In fact, the guides have said to me many times, they said we were more spiritual when we were in the point and grunt stage. In other words, when we, as a collective group of people, would see a flower and we'd point at it and go, when there was no language, nothing, just feelings, we go, and
right.
point at it. Everybody would look at the flower, and everybody would have their own personal experience. Whereas today, we define everything. We define it down to the nth degree. And what happens when you define something? You attach an emotion to it. What happens when you attach an emotion? You judge it. What happens when you judge it? You limit it. You limit that. You limit yourself. You limit your experience. You limit everything. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah, and for all the stuff that we have in the world that we think we're so sophisticated, no, we have such great language and 10 words for everything. And, well, gosh, back in the olden days, and I'm talking, you know, swinging in through the trees days, we were pure. It's like you said, I bet we saw all kinds of things that we poo-poo today, but we used to see those when we were children. You know, I believe a lot of children see the gnomes and the fairies and see other entities. I did.
Yeah, I did too.
Where did you think I got those stories that the nuns would pull me out and say, come on, Peggy, tell us the stories. I was 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
And they're like, come on, tell us. And I say, well, we went there. I had these big stories. Well, they were real to me.
Yeah.
And the nuns would just think if they thought I was telling stories. And I remember they called my parents and they said, you know, Peggy's very special. We would like to take her on our summer retreat. And my parents said, absolutely not. You know, I was a little girly and I can't be gone for 3 months from my mom.
Yeah.
And they didn't want me to be a nun anyway.
That's interesting that you started out with that, because that's sort of how I see you now, but not attached to a religion.
Uh-huh.
And not in a negative way or the connotating way that a nun might be. But I actually see you as like a self perpetuating angelic form now. That's kind of how you have to function.
Yeah. You know, you're right. And I'm a teacher. I call myself a teacher and intuitive.
Yeah.
And I do have these wonderful gifts. And I just, my whole thing is to just bring reason to the planet and just be an embodiment of my truth. Because that's all I can do. Anybody, if everybody was an embodiment of their truth, we could start there.
That's the only place there is to start.
I know.
You know, that's in my mind anyway. That's where you start.
Right.
People ask me, because I do lectures and stuff around the world, and I, well, where do we start? I say, make start with the truth.
Exactly.
Whatever kind of denial you have going on in your own psyche, get rid of it and
right.
work on it and,
right.
and face your weaknesses and don't be chastising yourself for it. Accept them because we're all weak.
Right.
And we
right.
see that in each other. Work it out.
We're
know?
Human.
And that's where you start.
And a lot of people who try to strive for perfection, they sometimes forget we are experiencing a human experience right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
And we have to remember that we chose this.
Yeah.
And that we're supposed to do it for a reason. And that's, you know, one reason why I keep coming back time and time again from the other side, because I have work to do. And I'm human. I'm going to trip and fall on my face. I'm going to do all kinds of goofy things. And I just say, well, I did my best and keep going. You know, what can you do? And that's one of the reasons I get fearful of religions, because, you know, they have such set standards in that if you fall short, then you're such a bad person. And I hate that, because I say, no, you're a human person trying to do your best. Like that child who drew the tree, you know, I was explaining. They
yeah.
did their best. And you don't punish them because it doesn't look like a tree. You encourage them and you love them unconditionally. So
that's right.
But I love, you know, people like you that have the scientific background. It fascinates me. I love to hear, you know, the actual scientific side of all this, because one thing the guides have said many times is that this is all based, they talk a lot about electricity, they talk about numbers all the time, things that I don't really know anything about.
Right.
But they talk about the vibration, color vibration, number vibration, sound vibration. They talk about that all the time, and it's fascinating to me because it's more than what we think it is. You know, because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there, right?
Well, I agree totally. And most of the time, you don't see it because you're too busy in your own thoughts or mm-hmm. our own actions to see what the truth is anyway.
Right.
And then we get forced into, like, insulin problems like you had or a hemorrhage, and suddenly you wake up and you see what you're going to see because you have to now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you asked for it anyway.
I know. And, you know, I really thanked a lot. Yeah,
yeah,
no, you're right. I really feel like I went through stages. You know, I had to have that little experience. I had to have that major trauma. You know, I wouldn't have been able to handle it. I mean, even the guides didn't introduce themselves to me for a few years because they knew that the first time I popped over there, they're standing there going, yo, what's up? I would have run screaming from the, you know, back into the other side. I would have said, what is this? Oh, my God, it's the devil.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have understood. And I loved it when the first time I went back after they had diagnosed me with diabetes, they had every right to go, told you so.
That's true.
But when I came back, there was nothing. It was like, we're so glad you're back. We're so glad you're okay. Now let's get to work and continue on. It was like, and it was so cool. And if we could just give that sort of unconditional reason to other people on the planet as well, think about the world, how different it would be.
Yeah.
You know, really, but...
The other side of the coin is, too, one of my other feelings and beliefs is that, you know, when you come here and you take this incarnation here, you have a lot of free choices, but you had a choice. We have a choice to sort of map out what we want to learn.
Yep.
I don't really feel that we have a choice of how we're going to learn it, because when I start every day, you know, like say I had all these events happen today, and I say, well, tomorrow I'm going to continue on with whatever I didn't finish today. So tomorrow comes, and if I can get 10% of what I thought I was going to do tomorrow accomplished, it's 10%. I feel I've had a pretty successful second day there, because it changes. Everything changes. The whole reality, the whole world changes the very next day.
And that's free will, too.
Yeah, it's free will. And a lot of people don't look at it that way. You have to look at it that way. It's the only thing that'll work.
Exactly. And, you know, I believe that we come in with, there's certain things that are predestined. But
yeah.
within those predestined things, there's not a lot of them, but there are a few of them, like the diabetes, and because I chose this pool for...
Well, that was your gene pool of choice. Now,
exactly. But then through your free will, that is your life lived.
Yeah, now what... Yeah, it's too bad. Well, obviously you're not going to have children, so you can't pass on any corrections. So you will make
yeah.
corrections just to your own psyche. But in some diseases like alcoholism and drug addiction,
mm-hmm.
where there is a gene that goes from transference from one family to another,
okay.
a person can start taking control of that gene and become, recognize alcoholism or drug addiction, completely abstaining from it, and then pass on a slightly corrected generic trait to the next generation.
Yes.
That's one form of genetic chemical changes I've seen possible. In your case, you're not allowed to do that. So I think you even have a higher mantle to fulfill than one who can actually make some bio changes and pass them on, because you can't do that.
Right.
So you have to do it the hard way. You have to do it with spiritual intensity, like total on white light, and that's just about what you got in the very beginning. How old were you when you had that experience, by the way?
The diabetes or the...
No, the white light one in the tunnel.
The tunnel. I was 24.
Yeah, so you were pretty young.
This is my 50th year.
Yeah.
And you look at me, and I think people that have met me, nobody can even imagine that I'm that old. I look at least 10 years younger.
Well, your voice sounds like about a 24 or 25, 30-year-old a month.
Well, also, when you look at me, I tell people I'm having the big birthday, and they're going, oh, you're going to be 40 this year?
Yeah.
And I go, I love you. It's the 50th, but you know what? I'm embracing it. It's just the beginning of this whole thing. I'm healthy. I'd match my blood work with anybody, cholesterol, all that stuff, because I'm so conscious. Sometimes I think that type 1 diabetics are, without not counting the diabetes, the ones that are in control are healthier than your average person, because we know what's going on. We know everything we put in our mouth, what it does to our body, because we check our blood sugars and we see by a number what it's doing to us.
Oh yeah,
you
have zero tolerance.
Exactly. You want to see what a big old piece of cake does to your blood sugar?
Oh my God.
Check your blood sugar afterwards and see what it does. You know, so I am very healthy, and nobody ever guesses my age, and that's okay. I know someday I will grow into my age, but until then,
you'll never grow into your age. You'll just move on, and then you'll be one of those spirit guides, and one of them will come down here and incarnate, and you'll be guiding them from the other side.
I can't believe you just said that, because that's what they told me I was going to do, that I was going to become, I was going to join them and be a guide in the next trip around, I should say.
Yeah.
I don't know if one of them are coming down, but I think they are, but I'm definitely one, a guide in the next life. And
well, that's cool, because it gives you confidence right up to your last moments in this realm, you know?
Yeah.
And they'll be right there waiting for you anyway.
I know.
There's a transition. You probably won't even know when it happens.
Yeah, you know what? That's true. And they also say, you know, we never leave. It's you that leaves. We're always
here. Exactly.
We're always here. And the other thing is that I've noticed this with all kinds of NDEers, you know, people that have had experience, out of body, near death, whatever you want to call it, they all say the same thing. They all say, well, I don't want to die, but I'm not afraid to die anymore.
Yeah,
I totally
understand that.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, we're running out of time,
okay.
So we got less than a minute here. Quickly give out your website again, then
okay.
We're
going
to close the show down, because the next guest has to come on.
Okay, it is www.selffullife.com. So it's self as in myself, dash full, like the cup is full, dash life.com. Selffullife.com.
Okay, thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Our guest tonight has been Dr. Peg Abernathy with this wonderful book, and she's had a near-death experience, but it sounds like she's living that in a daily life and enjoying it. And so until next week, I want to thank all my 13 listeners, or 13 million, or however many is out there tonight, for listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. My Tuesday night show usually a pre-recorded with just a science lecture. Usually that show is now on Friday mornings. And everybody down in Florida and Tampa Bay, have a great evening and stay dry, and we'll be talking to you soon. Thank you from Dr. Fred Bell and the Health, Science, and Energy show.